Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory Podcast Series. Today we're speaking with Scott Tyler, who's a director with Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory, about some interesting property tax audit trends happening in the state of Florida these days. And Scott, how are you doing today?
Very well, Matt. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. And let's just jump right in. So my first question is, so who gets audited in Florida and what is the authority allowing them?
Well, Matt, for the first part, who gets audited? I will tell you that the answer most counties will give you is that audits are completely at random. However, the Florida DOR, Department of Revenue, will suggest that they can also be chosen by such methods such as information sharing by other Florida state agencies, looking at business publications, periodicals, journals, and directories, analysis of Florida tax return information. I even know of a taxpayer that recently had gotten over a sales and use tax audit, and then immediately after that, they were hit up with a personal property tax audit. So read into that what you like, but you know, clearly there are other methods that are causing people to be audited in the state. As to the second part regarding the authority, if you ask most people in Florida, even the property appraisers themselves, what's the audit procedure, you may get some blank stares and some confused looks. And I'll try and give some clarity to this since perhaps some of the most, Florida really is one of the most haphazard processes in the United States, if you want to call it a process at all. It's somewhat of the wild, wild west. The DOR and the property appraisers themselves will point out to you Florida Administrative Code 12D-1-005 and Florida Statute 195.027 subsection 3 as the authority allowing them to perform audits on personal property tax. However, the fact is that the actual legislative authority is really somewhat ambiguous. For example, if you call the Department of Revenue for guidance, they even will refer you to sales and use tax statutes for authority in the process. And that's because statutory guidance for personal property is brief at best and only says that each county has the right to audit, but many contend that the authority in that code is based upon that the code is based upon, it doesn't really exist for personal property and is only applicable to real property. Now, there is guidance under the agency code, but again, many say that the agency code greatly exaggerates its authority based on the limited guidance that's set forth in the statute. It's fair to note that some taxpayers have contested this authority. For example, some taxpayers have actually refused to participate in an audit, and they have received nothing after that, no correspondence. They just did not have to go through with the audit. However, others who have contested this authority do receive a subpoena ordering them to comply. And this ability for the jurisdiction to have the authority has not been judicially tested yet on appeal. And right now, individuals who are getting a subpoena are having to comply. Now, the DOR does understand that this is a problem. We called the DOR, and they said that the tax audit section of the Personal Property Administrative Code is on their list to be addressed. Currently, they are waiting for each county to formalize their own audit procedures and will then pass these on to the state legislature, who will attempt to combine them in some manner into the next legislative session so we can get some statutory guidance. They were trying to do this in 2015, but it didn't happen, so perhaps we'll see it in the next legislative session in 2016.
Great. Thanks for those insights there, Scott. So are audits consistently applied throughout Florida's 67 counties?
This is a good segue from the last discussion, Matt, that we just had. The short answer is there's absolutely no consistency across the state. As I mentioned before, it's kind of the wild, wild west comes to mind. As I just mentioned, the DOR is waiting for each county to send in the process that they use so they can formulate some consistency that can be codified into a statute. Right now, each county is completely inconsistent from each other and the DOR. For example, we made anonymous calls to all of the major counties in Florida, Several admitted that they have yet to formalize their audit procedures at all. And depending on who you spoke with, even in the same county, you received different answers to different to the same questions depending on the person that you talked to within their same office. To summarize, the main takeaway is if you're under audit and you have questions about what the procedures are that you need to work with, I would say call the jurisdiction and ask them, and then maybe call again and again and make sure that you get a consistent story from them. Also, if it's something you feel is going to treat you adversely from a tax perspective, then you may want to speak with a consultant who knows how to navigate the system, because just because the jurisdiction says they're correct doesn't necessarily make it so in this situation.
So tell us then, Scott, who conducts the audits?
Well, basically you have two different entities. You have the property appraisers themselves at the county, and then you have third-party auditors. First, I'll talk about the property appraisers. The main counties in Florida are Orange and Osceola County, but other counties, and there's 67 of them, other counties do audit sporadically. Orange County is the main county that has had a formal program for years, and in speaking with clients and other consultants I know and comparing it to what we know, the county's technicians that they're using are generally very inexperienced and right out of school. Thus, the quality in the communication is somewhat poor and inconsistent. The next county, Osceola, this county has completely turned over their audit program to a third party called Tax Management Associates, or TMA for short. I recently had a client who just concluded an audit there. They were given a no change. TMA said that they had found both exposure and over-reporting, so the jurisdiction decided to call it a no change. However, the client looked at the work papers and believed that they were actually due a refund. The second entity to conduct audits really are the third parties. The main one is Tax Management Associates, or TMA, that I just mentioned is running Osceola's audits themselves. TMA touts themselves as the company who has performed more business personal property audits than any other company in the nation. I've had extensive experience with TMA nationwide, and my opinion is that they're doing these audits at a very rapid pace. They are just looking at categories and numbers and not giving a critical look at actual assets and classifications, and they'll call many non-reportable assets reportable assets. Here's a real-life example of a manufacturer that I represented in a TMA audit that occurred in the state of North Carolina. Now, North Carolina, its audit cycle is every 6 years. Well, my client had an audit in the prior 6 years. They had come to terms with the property appraiser 6 years ago that they would render their personal property in a particular method and manner, and it was all agreed upon. It was signed by the property appraiser. It was signed by my client, and my client even had to pay a little bit of penalty and interest and principal, 6 years prior. Well, fast forward 6 years to the present when they were having their audit, and TMA was conducting this audit. Well, TMA came in and said the agreement that they had with the property appraiser 6 years ago was incorrect, and they invalidated it and said that my client owed $1.2 million in principal, penalty, and interest based on how they were filing, which, again, remember, was agreed upon with the property appraiser 6 years prior. So they received their audit results, which is a very bad time to start looking into an audit. Preferably you want to start looking at it on the front end before you ever receive the results so you can work with the jurisdiction. However, we received it afterwards. And after I reviewed it, I came to the conclusion that the client actually should be due a $50,000 refund. So we had a lot of negotiations. The client ended up settling for about $200,000 in principal, penalty, and interest, but contrast that between the $1.2 million that TMA said they originally owed versus what I thought that they should have actually paid. They should have gotten a refund of $50,000, and then compare that to what they actually settled for, which is $200,000. It just goes to show you that there's a wide variability in what can be audited and what you actually end up with.
Yeah, for sure, Scott. So What information must you provide for an audit then?
Well, the jurisdiction will generally ask for the world in their request, and typically only a small fraction of what they request is relevant or necessary. Again, it's controversial if you really need to provide all of this or any of it at all due to the ambiguous statutory language. But the items the jurisdiction typically requests are things like profit and loss statements, invoices from purchases of the property in question, inventories, federal income tax returns, general journal and ledgers showing date of acquisition and install price, financial statements for the business, insurance policies insuring the equipment, leases, and other records by which to determine the value of their inventory. So you can see the vast majority of the time I have only provided maybe fixed asset detail and a few other supporting documents on an as-needed basis. I have never had an occasion where all of the things that I just listed off was necessary.
Interesting. So what is the most common mistake you see taxpayers make during an audit then?
Quite frankly, it's giving too much information, as I just mentioned. You should give what you feel is relevant and also give what pertains to that account and property. To illustrate this, I have another kind of horror story that I heard the other day from a colleague where they had a client with property in a Florida jurisdiction for one location. The client gave the auditor what they believed they were asking for, which was their journal, their general ledger, their journal entries, everything. But not only did they give it to that for that location, they gave it for all of their locations nationwide. So this county, instead of saying, gee, it looks like you have a lot of information here, it looks to be for a lot of other locations other than the one that we are auditing, instead of asking those questions, they did the audit on the entire pie of the entire nation. So they didn't look at the one location. They looked at every location in the USA and gave them an audit result and a forced assessment for every location, every asset they had nationwide. Needless to say, when they got the audit results back, they were floored, and they didn't know what they were looking at, and then they had to get some professional help in to help them unwind this. But again, just making sure that you are giving only the information that you need, because you can't rely upon who's auditing it to, you know, really do what needs to be done.
Wow, interesting stuff there. So what do you believe is the trend for audits in Florida these days?
Well, I believe you're going to see an upward trend for several reasons. The first reason is I attend a lot of the annual meetings of the FCIAAO, which is the Florida chapter of the International Association of Assessing Officers. And I've seen several of their sessions and their discussions where they are proselytizing the virtue of doing tangible personal property audits in the state of Florida. And I've seen more and more of that as the years have progressed. Second, there has been a large push in recent years to audit homestead exemptions for residential real estate. I see this shifting more towards tangible personal property, as it has been a successful tactic for the property appraisers in recent years. The third reason, I mentioned that Orange County is one of the most one with the most formal audit program in the state of Florida, and they have been touting their success. Indeed, if you go to the property appraiser's webpage for Orange County, the property appraiser, Rick Singh, brags about how he has, quote, returned more than $51 million to the Orange County tax base by vigorously pursuing fraudulent claims through improved compliance investigation work, unquote. Now, I personally find the rhetoric of fraudulent claims a little unnerving, as many audit discoveries are just a taxpayer error or a legitimate difference of opinion. Rick further states, quote, between homestead fraud and tangible personal property audits, more than $152 million has been given back to Orange County taxpayers as of January 2015. That number continues to grow, unquote. So as you can see, Orange County's aggressive position, you know, you can see they're being very aggressive about this, and they are one of the chief proponents in the state that's pushing this. Lastly, the third-party audit involvement seems to be increasing through companies like TMA, As I mentioned, Osceola County is using them, and I have no doubt that this will spread if the jurisdictions believe they can now get a viable return on their investment without having to employ additional resources of their own at the jurisdiction. Now, I took some time to review TMA's webpage, and it shows what states they do work in, but it doesn't show the counties that they work in. Specifically for Florida, their webpage currently shows that they have performed 541 audits, discovering value of over $513 million, with an M. I also, to contrast this, I did an analysis on the other states they do work in to see how consistent their results have been. TMA's largest state is the state of North Carolina, where they have historically been able to charge their fees on a contingency basis. They say they have recorded nearly $21 billion, with a B, in discovered value over 58,000 audits. That's a lot of audits. So $21 billion in discovered value. Now let's compare that to the state of Tennessee, where they can only charge a flat fee per account, and in my experience, it's typically between $500 to $1,000 per account. And they say they have recovered just a little less than $8 million with an M in discovered value over 56,000 audits. So just 2,000 audits less than what they've done in North Carolina. So if you compare the two states who have nearly the same amount of audits, North Carolina's average discovered value per audit is about $361,000, where Tennessee is only $137. Does this show how much more aggressive TMA will be in a contingency state versus a non-contingency state? All things even, you would think they would be roughly the same, but, you know, perhaps Tennessee taxpayers are just a lot better at reporting their personal property than taxpayers in North Carolina. No, you can be the judge. But, by the way, I looked at the current average discovery for the 541 Florida audits, and it's about $950,000 in value, or nearly triple what they're averaging in North Carolina. So I do not believe they can do contingency audits in Florida, but still, this just shows that they are being quite aggressive in the audits that they are performing currently in Florida.
Wow. So what are your final recommendations for a taxpayer that gets audited in Florida then?
Well, first, it's almost a recap of what I said. First, find out who is doing the audit. Is it the county or the third party? Because you may get a lot more different treatment from one versus the other. The second is, again, they're going to ask for the world. There's really not a necessary reason to give them the world. I would give them what's appropriate and work with them to get the right answer. That's what this is all about. This should be to get the record correct. It shouldn't be a fishing expedition. Third, try to maintain communication on where they are in the process. Once you give them the information, typically they'll go away for a while and just come up and appear with a magical number. I found it's very good advice to stay in touch with them, make sure they don't have any questions, make sure that the data that they're looking at is the correct data, so when they come back, it's not a complete surprise. Fourth, I would not blindly accept their findings. Review them for errors, because I've run across many. And don't accept that a process is in stone, because as you've seen, Florida doesn't have any real process to speak of. Finally, if you're not sure, ask someone very early in the process to assist you that knows the process, like Altus. Don't wait until you have the audit results to find out that you have a problem, because once you do that, it's much harder to correct at that stage than when you're first starting out the audit and you're giving them the information for the very first time.
Great. You know, Scott, that's a perfect way to end this interview. And for all of our listeners, you just heard an exclusive Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory podcast interview with Scott Tyler, who's a director with Altus State and Local Tax and Advisory. And Scott was kind enough to share some of his very in-depth insights on some audit trends that are happening in the state of Florida these days. And Scott, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, my pleasure, man.
Take care.